House come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
What you just heard means it's time for a brand new episode of Capital Ideas, the podcast where members of the majority Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives join me here at the Capitol and talk about their ideas. Just in the last few weeks, those ideas have involved increased support for Washington schools, creative ways to address the shortage of affordable housing, bills to improve community safety, and overall, a whole lot of ideas that together can make Washington a better place to live, work, and raise a family. Today's guest on Capital Ideas has been here before, but it's been a while. Representative Sharon Wiley is here in Olympia thanks to the constituents of the 49th Legislative District. That's down at the bottom left-hand corner of the state, and if that sounds like Vancouver, USA, you're right. This is Sharon's 14th year in the House. She serves as co-chair of the House Committee on Controlled Substances and Gaming, and she sits on the Finance and Transportation Committees as well. We'll touch on all those areas in the next 20 minutes. Here we go. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Representative Sharon Wiley from the 49th District. That's America's Vancouver for the most part. And here we are, two or three days from the end of session. It's been a short and intense 57 days, I think, so far. What are you thinking here with 3 days left in this session?
Most of what I'm thinking is how much work there still is to do. Short sessions are picking up what's left over from the last session, but we had an extraordinary number of new bills, plus the ones that didn't pass last time. And we have a lot of newer members. So there was an intensity, and we have a lot of challenges going on in our social fabric as well.
We do indeed. We're going to want to talk about that. And one of the things in Washington State that is a part of the social fabric is marijuana. You are the co-chair of the House Regulated Substances and Gaming Commission. I'm not sure why they threw those two together, but that's a different discussion. You've been busy this session, as you were last year, considering legislation dealing with cannabis.
Right.
It seems like a greater challenge than people anticipated 10 years ago. Every day, a study comes out that says that cannabis causes this or that condition, psychosis, whatever. And then the next day, another study comes out that says, no, that's not the truth. Here's the situation. How are you wading through this, and what kind of legislation is going to result from that?
I'm a pretty moderate person in a lot of ways, and I made a living as a more of a systems reform person for about 30 years before I became a legislator. And regulated substances are, you know, basically tobacco, cannabis, and alcohol. Alcohol has evolved from prohibition days, so there were a lot of unique parts to our system there. The cannabis system was designed for an initiative to pass, and initiatives aren't easily changed. And we were the second in the country to have a recreational cannabis system. Our medical system, which people thought was legalized, was not legalized really, it was decriminalized. And so we had to figure out what to do about the medical piece. A lot of assumptions were made that the medical piece was really wink, wink, recreational, and that it wasn't serious. And it really, really is. And cannabis is different because it is medicinal for some people, and there's a lack of research. So a lot of states that came on later learned from what we didn't think about. And one of the biggies is the equity, the generational pain and destruction from the war on drugs. A lot of people of color went away to prison, creating generational impacts on their families. This is the time to remedy that. And so remedying that on top of a system that was designed by an initiative and has been cruising along for 10 years while new products are created. Frankly, one of the biggest problems we have is chemically altered, lab altered hemp that has been turned into cannabis and adulterated with other materials and hasn't been caught in our legality system and is coming from other countries and isn't regulated and is being sold to everybody and we don't know what's in it. So that is a side concern. Regulation is different from enforcement, and we are trying to remedy the war on drugs impact on cannabis, pay attention to new products, address the concerns that a lot of us have about anything that might be a gateway drug in an era of fentanyl, and a lot of mythology about cannabis. Plus, it is a legit business that the voters approved, and we need to be fair to people who are following the rules while still paying attention to people who aren't following the rules, incorporating new data and new research into what we think about, and balance public health and welfare with protection and, you know, the legal system and the practicalities of having a system that works. I like government that works. This has been a really challenging time, and it's 10 years out, and, I asked for this job because 10 years is enough to find out what's working and not working about our entire system. Money is always tight. I'm not on the committee that decides how to spend the money, but I am on this committee that talks about taxes and that talks about regulated substances and gaming. And before cannabis, this committee was like study hall. The tribal compacts were worked out with the governor, and they were blessed by this committee. The alcohol system had been going along since prohibition with a few little tweaks here and there. And at the same time that the cannabis system was designed to be on top of the alcohol system, Costco was dismantling our alcohol system. So that system went away the same year that cannabis became legal. So we were dismantling a system and building a system at the same time, and it was a rapidly changing system. And today we're paying attention to the equity concerns in terms of our licensing and how we enforce, and we're trying to pay attention to new data. It's probably the most challenging legislative matter that I've grappled with in my long career.
It has been a long career. You and I have both been around here for a long time.
We have.
It sounds like being co-chair of that committee is about 5 full-time jobs, but you have other jobs here as well. You are on other committees. You are maybe the key person on one fairly large issue down here, which is the bridge over the Columbia River.
Exactly. We're at a critical point in transportation. We were able to secure $1 billion for our state's share of that a few years ago. And I and a few of my dedicated colleagues have been working for 12 years to come up with a new proposal that builds on enough of the old work that was done and that was stopped about 12 years ago, that we're not wasting that work. And we don't have to pay back federal dollars that would come out of existing projects in other people's district. And we have moved it ahead so that it is now in the process of federal review. Our Oregon people stepped up for their share, and we still are getting over some other hurdles. The feds are going to have some things to say about. We're going to have to agree on some of the further things. But we've come a hell of a long way, and I'm very proud of the work that we've done. At the same time, we are getting ready in the fairly near future, I think, to shift away from gas tax because of electric vehicles and because of diminishing gas taxes. And we're making big investments in green energy and green transportation. And right now we're in a shortfall in our main funding source for transportation projects on the roads and everything. We have instituted our Climate Act, which is providing some of the green investments, but it can't repair roads or bridges. So we are in a really challenging time to try to keep everything moving from the different packages that we've fought for to make these investments that are going to create the jobs and the structural environment for the future for our children and grandchildren.
You're in a quandary.
Well, infrastructure has always been a less partisan endeavor. How you pay for it can get pretty partisan.
Yeah.
But the Transportation Committee is large and diverse and operates nothing like the other Washington. There's a lot of collegiality and a lot of outreach to the different corners of our state so that when we do something, there's support there. and there's justification. That makes it a very satisfying committee, but it's very complex. There are many different funding sources. There are many different needs. And the fact of the matter is that the Eisenhower era produced most of our roads and bridges that are failing right now and need to be restored. And people back in that day made the investments that have carried us from point A to point B all these years until now, when we have to upgrade and improve some of that infrastructure.
We've talked about transportation in general, which is a statewide concern. We touched on the bridge a little bit, which is really a concern for everybody who lives on the West Coast.
Exactly.
Because it is the road that goes all the way to San Diego and to
Mexico to Canada.
Exactly. Let's move to your district right now and talk about some of the things, because in addition to working on these statewide issues, you've also been elected by a certain number of people down in the 49th district to do some things. And what would you point your finger at as being a couple of issues that concern people in the 49th district and that region that you have been working on?
Well, like every other region, the housing shortage and the need to invest in addiction treatment and mental health treatment and how that converges. We have families living in cars that have never lived in cars before. It is a really tough time. And I'm proud that the legislature has stepped up to provide a multitude of tools to get at the housing shortage. And I have kind of a long-term view of things. And I remind myself and other people that 50-some years ago, we closed down the hellhole mental institutions that deserved to be closed down. We didn't invest in the community-based mental health system that we should have. And that's what we're doing right now. And our governor has been a leader in staying the course for making sure that we open up these local facilities so people can be near their family and friends and get well in whatever treatment they need. We know more chemically about mental illness treatment, and we are finally stepping up after 50 years of decline and loss in these services. We are finally getting there, but it can't be done overnight. And we even have to train new people to be counselors and therapists. So we've got that. The federal government has stepped away from housing about the same number of years ago. At the same time, we have enormous population pressures. We have people retiring. We've had a couple of recessions that have been very key to our housing market. And we have a lot of work to do. You know, one of the things that makes me most proud about my community is twice our community has voted to tax themselves for housing and homeless services. We were probably the first in the state to have a Council for the Homeless that was a coordinating body to make sure that the faith community, the nonprofits, and our government entities worked in a cohesive way to target the right services, that they didn't all chase the same grant and ignore other needs, that there was a coordination. And we created Winter Hospitality Overflow so that we wouldn't be in the shelter business forever. We could provide wraparound services. So my community voted twice, once to do it and once to renew it, to have a property tax that is addressing and creating tiny home villages, wraparound services, places for people to go, connecting kids with services at their school to provide that kind of, you know, stability and academic support. And we also have the best library in the state, and people voted for that too. So people will vote for the things that matter. And part of the job of a legislature is to, we're citizens. We're citizens first. All legislators are citizen bodies. So it's hard, but it's not rocket science. And we will be replaced eventually. So we have to let people know that the job is doable collectively, and that it is complicated, but is so interesting and so important. If these were easy issues, they would have been solved at the neighborhood or the local level. We wouldn't be dealing with them. This is a very rich and rewarding and warm environment to work in. And, you know, my most opposite political person in this body is trying to do the right thing. And you have to remember that. And people appreciate it even when they disagree, if they know where their money is going and they know who you are. I think that's all you can do. And keep working and keep addressing the new issues that come up.
Talking about substance abuse and homelessness and the housing crisis, it reminds me that you worked for a while here in the legislature with a fellow 49th district lawmaker, Representative Jim Mueller, the very recently late Jim Mueller, who was beloved down here, Speaker Pro Tem. In addition to being a highly regarded legislator and before that a city council member in Vancouver who had a lot of accomplishments, he also was a substance abuse counselor in his private life. I just wanted to get Jim's name in here when we're talking about the 49th District because he was a highly regarded gentleman.
And he was a pioneer in more areas than people realize.
Exactly. In the LGBTQ community, he was a hero.
He was, and it wasn't easy. When he started out on the city council in Vancouver, and during his time, the city of Vancouver was one of the first communities in the state to make sure their employees had access to benefits and same-sex partners had access to those benefits at all, way before marriage equality. But when he was an open gay person on the city council, there were death threats. His mother got some really cruel calls from people. It wasn't easy, and he was really, you know, had a great sense of humor. He was an incredibly civil person, and he was a real support to many in the community, and he is a very important person in our political history.
He's also one of the only people I've ever known who could genuinely pull off a bow tie. Well,
not to mention the incredibly sparkly cufflinks.
Yeah, exactly. He was a good guy. We've been talking for a little while here. I think that, in fact, our appointment ran out 2 minutes ago. I guess you have other things
to do. You're
going
to have to do some editing.
But before we go, I don't want to just cut this off and say thank you for coming here, Sharon. I would like for you to tell me, what do you want to go out with here?
I think that a lot of people specialize in areas that they know, and I'm a very curious person. I've been a generalist, and sometimes it's kind of painful to not be an expert, but this job requires that you learn something new every day, and so I try to be a professional generalist and to pay attention to a wide range of topics, and I would like to go out as a very honest person, and as I get older, I have fewer and fewer filters on my mouth, and so far it's okay. But I, you know, first time I ever got paid to work in a state legislative campaign was over 40 years ago in California when I was still a student, and then I served two terms in the Oregon legislature, and people always ask me what the difference is, and you know, I'd like to go out with somebody as somebody has real perspective, and my perspective on the differences between our two states is that Washington is all about herding your cats because you don't register by party. It's sort of like Chicago without the corruption. And Oregon is the land of the cowboys and earth mothers in a New England town meeting. And so over the years, I haven't changed my mind about that perspective. And I think that I would also like to be remembered as being kind. People think politics isn't a very kind occupation, but it's never a mistake. And there's a lot more respect between people that work together for the people in their district than folks realize.
We've been talking with Representative Sharon Wiley from the 49th District. I've really enjoyed this, Sharon. Thank you for coming by the Capital Ideas studio, and I hope that the next 3 or 4 days are as smooth as possible for you and your colleagues.
Well, they'll certainly be interesting. Thank you.
That's another Capital Ideas for the Archives. Majority House Democrats have been producing this podcast for 16 years, and you know what that means. It means next year will be 17, and it's about time you subscribed if you haven't done that yet. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts, or you can visit the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov and click on the media button at the top. It's intuitive from there, and you'll never miss another episode. This is your state government. What happens here matters, and you'll learn more here than you will by following your best friend's cousin's uncle. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889, because that's what we do. Thanks for listening.